Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah! Podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints talk from Meat House. This week, the New Orleans Saints, an exciting comeback where the Saints come back from a huge deficit just to fall short right at the last minute. Such an exciting game and showed a lot of perseverance, a lot of, you have to say character. I would say it was pretty outstanding. The special teams played so well in this game. Again, they've been a consistent part this entire season, just consistency from start to finish. Our young rookie kicker comes through with a long, 52-yard field goal?
Yep.
And quite frankly, I'm sorry I didn't look it up, but the Saints rush defense, outstanding again, holding Atlanta Falcons to low numbers. I didn't look them up, but I mean, it was really, really good.
Hey folks, all right, listen, I'm so not in the mood for you guys. You're blabbering on and on. Okay, and it's enough, all right? It's enough. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, today's Monday, all right? So stop doing your stupid radio thing, and if you want to pick up where you left off tomorrow, at least it'll be Tuesday, all right? So just keep it down. Actually, don't keep it anything. Just stop, okay? Just stop doing what you're doing.
Guys, I mean, listen, I don't know. Listen, I get it. We lost. We lost 27-25. But I mean, is there really something you can say other than we just fell short at the end of the game? I'll start off with you, Heath. We came up a little short.
Yeah, just a little. Well, you know what I can say now is Trevor Siemian knows what Drew Brees felt like too many times over the last 5 years or whatever. You know,
leave it to Heath to go negative. I mean, golly.
Well, you know.
No, but I mean, it's funny you say that, and I'm gonna let you have the floor back, but in my heart, I'll never forget that 49er playoff game where Drew Brees would have been an absolute hero. The Jimmy Graham touchdowns and the big comeback. And at the end, the defense gives it up. Please take it back over. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. Now,
you alluded to the rushing. You know, yeah, that was your bright spot. They held them to 34 yards rushing. Let's see. I think you already mentioned the special teams.
Y'all can't even come up with stuff because this wasn't the direction you were planning on going.
I can't even – the special teams were mostly good. You know you've had good punters when your punter sends one into the end zone and you're thinking to yourself, what the hell is wrong with him?
Right, right.
How did the ball get to the end zone? It's like we haven't had a ball get to the end zone in the last 9 years or whatever.
Who does that?
I know. But it was just everything else that was bad, Dave. That's all.
Well, Wesley.
Yeah.
I just went over just a gamut, a list, a smorgasbord, if you will, of positive things to take away from this game. It was amazing. Trevor Siemian fought through some adversity. And I mean, I thought he played extremely well. Matter of fact, I thought that Heath, when he brought up Drew Brees, I can, and all jokes aside, I mean, you could look at how he played and say, if Drew Brees would have done it, would you have thought any different between him and Drew Brees? I mean, if, you know, change it to nine.
Yeah, there's not a better game I could have imagined in my head from Trevor Siemian and what he did. We're seriously talking about, and I'm pulling this out of thin air. I don't know if I've ever seen an NFL game with 7 or 8 true drops, like where, I mean, NFL receivers, I don't get it. Like, should be able to catch the ball. And Trevor Siemian, these were not bad throws. These weren't diving in the air, falling to the ground. Like, he threw the ball well. And there's a real scenario where we're not being crazy.
Let me interject.
Trevor Siemian has 330 yards passing.
Yeah, let me interject this. In the Seattle game, there were two deep balls that everybody called drops.
Yeah.
Those would have been great catches.
Those were NFL quote unquote drops. The Kevin White one was, I mean, we're being pretty mean to him to call
that. He's going out of bounds, and you know,
Stills probably should have caught that. These were drops.
Dropped it.
I mean, and then we look at afterwards, it's the worst game in the NFL this season for separation by the receivers, giving more credence to Trevor Siemian threw the damn ball accurate this past week. And then, you know, we go into this game last week. We all talked about, we don't know what this team is. We don't have an identity. Who's our new quarterback? What's going on? Michael Thomas not coming back. The defense is good. And then the team plays two completely different halves. And, you know, this is classic Saints where the entire game's terrible. We come back, we take a lead at the end. I'm sure we all celebrated and we're like, we're going to win. The defense is, this is what the defense is built for. And then long play ends. Yeah. I mean, this was for the identity of this team, probably being how great the defense is. This was a classic Saints loss that we've seen for 15 years.
My text message that went out was, well, that was quick. I mean, honestly though, I can tell you that in my heart, there is never a time when the Saints score and there's time left on the clock that I say, oh, we got this. I mean, it's in this NFL is just too easy to move the ball. And let's talk about understanding how a defense has to play. And it's kind of a pet peeve of mine when you people start talking about, oh, they play that prevent defense. You know what? They have a choice. You either take a chance of giving up plays, or you have to play and try to run the clock out. Now, you can play that defense very well, or you can play it poorly, and then they get out of bounds and stop the clock, and they move down the field easily. But that was a situation where, you know, I know Rat Myron. Matt Ryan, I got to use that one. Matt Ryan is still a good NFL quarterback. And at one point, he was a very good NFL quarterback. He gets the ball out of his hands quick. And if you play soft, he's going to eat you up. And so, Heath, the comeback, were you expecting the Saints defense to hold the second week in a row?
No. my message that went out as soon as the Saints scored was too much time left.
Now, did you watch the first 59 minutes of the game? That was the question.
I did. And, you know, little did I know that my statement too much time left would have fit even if it had only been 20 seconds.
As yeah, right. You know, like, oh, there's Heath being negative. Yeah, oh, there's 20 seconds. And he's like, too much time. Too much time. Okay. Yeah. So listen, the Falcons have the ball, you know, in the red zone in field goal position. They decide they want to line it up, you know, get right in the middle of the field. The Saints, it comes out that the Saints were trying to let him score. But conversely, Atlanta was like, do not score. So he's just kind of the running back's just kind of standing around. And here comes Davenport and dislodges the ball with a karate chop that Wesley Coleman and his MMA training would have been proud of. Could you, in your wildest dreams, like, I saw everybody diving for the ball, but I'm thinking, okay, they doing that stupid stuff where they're trying to convince somebody that, but I mean, it was everybody on defense. Like, it looked like all 11 guys just did a belly flop. Yeah. And we still couldn't get the ball back, but that will haunt me. You know, we talk about the Giants game. It's like, oh man, that's the one that's going to haunt you, man. But this one, knowing that a running back put the ball on the ground when everybody's trying to strip it and we couldn't get on it. They gave us that game, and I'm talking like it happened. I'm like, wouldn't that have been classic Atlanta to just you have the game literally in your hand and you just said, we don't want it, and hand it back to them. Not one where, like, you had it in your hand. All you had to do is get one more stop, or, you know, make one more drive or kick a 50-yard field goal. No. Just all you got to do is just down the ball and kick the field goal, win the game. And they would have fumbled it, but it wasn't to be.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was already almost classic Falcons for giving up an 18-point lead as it was, which would have been a record for the Saints, I believe, as far as fourth quarter comes. I think their previous was 15 points.
The Washington game.
Yeah, they put the stat up on, you know. Man, you know, I'd say that the Saints look like 11 Cam Newtons in the Super Bowl, but I'm not sure, you know. I don't know. You know, that was one of those things after it happened, you know, where they say, you know, when the ball's just not bouncing your way or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It just, that in the end, yeah, that was heartbreaking that they couldn't, you know, that you're trying to strip the ball in a situation like that. That's really all you got left. And you actually get the ball out and nobody could get on it. But certainly the loss was set in motion long before that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it never comes down to one play or one player that cost the game. You know what I'm saying? Reality, you know?
No, and I said that during after the game is that everybody wants to try to find the one person or one thing that caused the game. Because I think most people, and I'm talking human beings, know if you can find one person to blame or one thing to blame, then all you got to do is fix that one thing.
You mean Malcolm Jenkins? Are we all talking about Malcolm Jenkins? I just want to make sure.
and everything is solved. You know, so this is a situation where, okay, we are 1-3 versus losing teams.
Like Wesley, bad losing teams.
4-0 versus winning teams. And I'm not talking about teams that are, you know, like just, you know, one game over 500. We beat two of the better teams in the NFL. And then we're 1-2 at home. To me, and I know people throw this around, and it reminds me of that scene in A Few Good Men where
– Well, Dave, our one win at home is not at home. It was in Jacksonville.
Wow, I didn't even consider that.
Yeah.
Nah, profound. Good catch. it reminds me of a scene in A Few Good Men, and people throw it around at parties and talk about it like it's the punchline of a joke, but focus. And the one thing – and I'll use Drew Brees – The thing that makes great players great is their ability to focus. You'll see guys start off games hot and then just not finish hot. And it's not just the games. It's an entire 17-game season. Now, I'm not trying to – obviously, I never played professional football, but during the course of a football season, when you start getting towards the – I live football. And towards the end of the season, man, when you have two or three games left, man, you start looking at practice like, man, you know, golly, you got to get out there again. And I try to look at it and say, man, these guys, it has to be a focus issue because you can't play so well in some games and then not so well in other games. But I have to feel like our teams, and I'll keep wanting to go back to this Drew Brees analogy. The thing that made Drew Brees great is his ability to just maintain his focus. I'm talking not just during the game, not through the course of a season, but down in and down out practice, the stories about him on the field going through mental reps and fake pumping to the, or throw, you know, what am I trying to say? When he's faking to the first guy, going to the second read, and he's the only guy on the field when everybody's off.
Right.
And this kind of focus is what separates good athletes from another guy who's the same type athlete, but yet he's great. And there has to be something on here, and I'll go to Wesley, that these guys just don't have the focus to be able to play against an emotional game against Tampa Bay and then play the very next week and maintain that energy and focus.
I begin to wonder, and so I do believe that Sean Payton, even with this loss right now, should be coach of the year, because what we've been through this season is, I think, astounding for a team with a winning record. But the things that we went through, even when we won the Super Bowl and then some of the runs we made, it seems like we've heard about in the Super Bowl run, him kind of manufacturing drama,
creating
game and all stuff. And to be fair, on the road and with the first games of our season, it was chaos. And he found a way to motivate and focus the team during chaos. And maybe he doesn't, I'm saying this wrong, he doesn't step up his game for a home game when nothing's going on and we just practiced all week. I'm not saying he needs to step up his game, but it sounds like maybe he just kind of lets it go through the motions, but we're on the road and we have a different way that he comes up with a game.
Hey, Wesley,
could be something to that.
Let me try to use my theory and add to what you just said, is that maybe there's only so much, and it wasn't, he said, create or manufacture. It wasn't conflict. What was the word that
drama.
He used? But it wasn't drama. But anyway, I guess if I can't think of the word, but what if, you know, he tries, but when you have all that actual drama that you just can't generate.
The rest of that stuff, the regular life, pale in comparison.
Right.
We've slept in our beds all week and we're playing the Falcons, who kind of suck. Like,
And I mean, how much drama can you manufacture when you've spent the first 6 weeks just it was there for you? And then all of a sudden you're trying to look at people in the eye and tell them, if you're not fired up for the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, our backs are up against the wall, guys. Well, no, like, you know,
right.
We're okay.
And so aren't that bad. When you add that to the fact that, listen, we have overcome some talent deficiencies, injuries, lots of stuff. So we're not talking about a team that is just superior to everyone in all facets like we were, let's say, last year. Heath, now all of a sudden, the Saints are, if you're not on top of your game, they show if you are on top of your game, we can be pretty damn good, even with the deficiencies. But if you're not, then boy, look, it took until the Saints just had actual adversity. That was the word, adversity.
Yeah.
Generate adversity. We had actual adversity in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden our players looked like much better players.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. This team right now is obviously playing to its competition. You know, we hear that cliche saying that, you know, they're playing down to the competition or whatever, but they're obviously getting themselves ready for the challenge when they play a top team. And then it just seems that they're overlooking, or whatever you want to call it, you know, these other teams. But I have a solution. I think the Saints should petition to play all their home games in Jacksonville, since they don't actually have a professional team anyway.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think the Jacksonville would enjoy it.
Actually, it's a bad week to
– yeah, yeah, to make that joke.
Yeah, I was going to say, like
– yeah, it could be worse. You could have lost a baseball score game to Jacksonville this week. We could be Buffalo.
The Saints are not unique this season. I mean, just this past week, you've got the Browns or the Bengals losing to the Browns badly, 41-16. The Broncos blew out the Cowboys. The Giants beat the Raiders. The Jaguars beat the Bills. And then, I mean, the Chiefs scored their 13 points. And then the Titans, without the real MVP of the season, like the whole league, he's the one that handles 45% of their offense. Yep. They beat the crap out of the Rams. I mean, this is a – we always talk about parity in the league and all that. This is a weird season with, I mean, teams losing games that they shouldn't. And, like, the Giants have won a few really weird games this year that they didn't seem to have any business being in. There's been some weird things going on. So I know that this is a Saints podcast, and we're going to focus on the Saints, but we're not unique to having a bipolar season. No offense to any bipolar people that are listening.
No, that's completely true this week. I just wish 1 week you'd been like, because you know those ones where they say, oh man, all of the home teams lost. And you're like, golly, or like in the playoffs, and you're like, God, we have a home game and we're the last game of the week. And you're like, okay, well, yeah. Statistically speaking, one of them's going to win. It's got to be us, right? No. Oh, all four home teams lost this week. You're like, geez, and crackers. But yeah.
Saying, Dave, if we make the playoffs but don't get home field advantage, we're winning the Super Bowl, right? Because we don't lose the teams with winning records, and yeah, we don't lose on the road.
I just think that, listen, I think it's a focus issue, and I think that we all know that we have some serious deficiencies. When we had Drew Brees, and his consistency, I don't want to say just roll the ball out, but when you have a guy like that, you beat the teams you should, because he's just consistent. The Saints aren't that consistent. So if they don't come with a high level of intensity, then all of a sudden it's like anybody can play with them, or, you know, if I'm saying that the right way. But at the same time, when they play with consistency and they play with intensity, they can beat anybody. And I don't know if that's the case, because quite frankly, I don't know, man. I, after what I saw Sunday, I just don't believe that they're going to just continue to beat all the good teams, even though it might be a close game and possibly lose to a bad team. When does that ever happen? At some point, a team that is just as intense as the Saints and has more talent on both sides of the ball is going to beat us, and that's usually the good team. So let me move on to this rumor that's starting to the Saints on Tuesday. Worked out three running backs, and the rumors are starting to pop up that Kamara may be banged up. Now, maybe not a serious injury, but enough to make them say, well, we might want to start looking for some depth and some help. And I'm going to start off with Heath and say the idea of not having a healthy Kamara on this team going forward, I don't even know what to say to that.
Yeah. I mean, he's the guy left on the team that we could least afford to lose, you know. So when do we get our first injury report?
Oh, okay. Wednesday.
tomorrow.
On Wednesday, yeah. So, I, you know, hopefully there's, you know, there's not much to it, or I don't know. You know, we just can't, we cannot go, you know, although, let's see. Yeah, so he accounted for 104 yards of offense in this past game. And statistically on the season, I'm sure he's got to, you know, he's got to have an inordinate amount of the
percentage of Saints offense.
Yeah, percentage of offense. And so, you know, yeah, we can't be without him. You know, we need help as it is already. So losing him, that's going to be, that'll be killer.
Well, early in the season, I mean, I think most people who understand football, and I mean, I mean that in a way of like, I don't just look at football as playing a game. I worry about the little things, and I think about like, golly, yeah, Kamara looked great, but you know, I catch a lot of crap from you guys too, but I'm like, he's going to get banged up. It's just you, this guy is not going to 400 carry guy. And even if he makes it through the season, he'll be like, and we've talked about it, he'll be like the kid over at in Carolina. And all of a sudden you start hearing about him being banged up. I think they waited a little long to, I don't know, man. I just don't know the way they handled this roster. And I'm going to transition into this. I'm not one to criticize Sean Payton's play calling. And in general, I'm not one to criticize their draft selection, because they just have so much more information. And for an amateur sitting in his house to read somebody else's draft guide and think that they know more than another NFL pro scouting department is ridiculous. But you can't, two things. You had to have known that you were going to be relying on the run more this offseason, and you didn't think that maybe it would be prudent to use a middle round draft pick on a running back. And I'm going to go even further with the problems that we're having receiver. You're going to tell me that Sean Payton didn't realize this? Was he so, and I'm not trying to say crazy stuff, but was he so confident? Yeah, there's a nice way to say it. Was he so confident in his system and his play calling ability that he thought he could get it done with anybody? Because I am worried, and I think I have serious reason to be worried, that what we saw early in the season was average guys stepping up and doing their best, and going forward, that we might see more of what we saw Sunday as opposed to what we saw early in the season, which still wasn't good. But you're going to tell me that you didn't think that you needed to invest a third-round pick? It's two drafts in a row, if I recall, and Wesley, you always have a good memory, better than mine on this stuff. Was it the last two draft classes, like really deep wide receiver classes?
Yeah. Like we've, and apparently we, there was a couple of people that we were looking at drafting. In fact, Terrace Marshall apparently was our draft pick before the Panthers heard that and jumped ahead of us to take him. I don't know where we're happy with the guys that are in our room, in our,
well, you got to say that. You got to say it.
And you really do, especially this deep in the season. I'll say I'm not happy with the guys in our wide receiver room. I know you were mentioning running back too. I think that going into the season, offensive line and running back was looked at as our two deepest positions. They would have thought Kamara, Dwayne Washington, Latavius Murray, Tony Jones Jr., and Alex Arma that we brought over. They probably thought that's one of the best running backs.
Okay, I would agree with that until football. They cut.
Didn't do that. They didn't do that till 3 days before the season started. Remember, they got shelled for treating Latavius Murray so bad.
But they still, I mean, my argument is that they got rid of him. And sure. Now looking at the depth was my concern terrible. Is that you and okay. So let me get back on point here. I agree with you that maybe up to the week before the season started that we were like, oh, we deep. And so let's cut this guy.
Yep.
And I get it. What'd we save? $1.5 million, you know, 1.5 or something like that.
I think it was just over two. I think
was it that much? Okay. Being, so $2 million. And now you have more depth.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You know, I really think to a large extent is that the Saints' hand finally got called with all the cap maneuvering. You know, so part of it is they simply just got down to the point where they didn't have any more aces to pull out of their sleeve to come up with. Okay, and I say the same thing, and I've said this all along about, boy, I wish they wouldn't have got rid of Murray. I don't think they really needed to do that. However, if the Saints do wind up signing Beckham or somebody else, that will be with money that they got when they got rid of Latavius Murray. If Latavius Murray is still here right now, So, you know, in the end, I really, we talk a lot about Loomis and he does amazing things, but I think this was the season where the Saints actually kind of started to run out of options as far as what they could do, the miracles that he could pull off. And I think, you know, and then the other thing is you got to realize, you know, the Saints thought they were going to go into this season with Michael Thomas back.
They now didn't that is true
until late into the process. Okay.
During Thomas, the draft and all that, we thought that's, he didn't come up with this injury until the surgery until June.
Right.
So back, way back then we thought in
that
April,
didn't
we
happen
thought
until
good.
June. They certainly didn't expect Traquan Smith to get hurt and stay out as long as he did.
Well, that was stupid of them.
You know, well, I know, but
and the thing is, I'm not trying to make fun of your comment, but then Wesley jumped in and said it before me. I mean, he has a history of injury.
Yeah, the truth is, I don't know if any team plans that way, and especially can't plan that way when your hands are tied with the cap.
Okay,
so all they can do is look at paper and say we're going to have Michael Thomas, Traquan Smith, Marquez Callaway is going to be our third guy, and Deontay Harris, and they look at that and they go, okay, yeah, I think we can work with that, right? We got bigger problems in other places that we have to do something about. Or you don't have Lattimore, he wouldn't have got his money. Or you don't have Ramchek, he wouldn't have got his money. Or you don't, you know.
You know what? You guys make good arguments, and you're making me question my points. But I'm really talking more about the draft. When we go with a guy like Bond, who I'm not giving up. Again, it's silly. This guy was a defensive end. They moved him to linebacker. He's shown a ton of improvement. Well, he went from being complete garbage to, hey,
he's
like
a special teams terror now.
And he's playing good special teams. But they gave up two draft picks to get him. You telling me? Because it's like, okay, when you draft in the first round, you're like, here's our group of players, and there's no wide receivers we like in that group. So you draft some money. But when you're in the second, third round, and you're moving up and down, and you trading two players to get one pick, you can't tell me that you couldn't negotiate a way to find a receiver who made that room better. And that's really what I'm talking about, because you're right. When you say Thomas, Callaway is your number three, Traquan is okay, and Harris. And quite frankly, maybe the coach knew Harris was better because he was showing signs last year. Maybe he realized that, because look, maybe you give Harris
he's showing
on
him
another
this
side.
Year. He's our best receiver this year.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, imagine if we had Thomas and also Harris playing like that. I don't know if we'd really be claiming crying about our receivers as much.
And again, we'll bring up that same draft right after doing the same thing with Bond. We traded four draft picks to get Adam Trautman, which is a terrible idea right now.
You would totally make my point, though. Thank you.
I'll agree with what he said. I mean, both sides. I can't, like you said, it's hard to blame our drafting because we've hit so many times. And even this year, it looks like we crushed the 2021 draft again. But what he said, I think, is important. I think starting lineup wise, and when I say starting lineup, I mean Michael Thomas being in the starting lineup and healthy, Traquan Smith. I think we have the best team in football starting 23 with, you know, 11 people on each side of the ball and a special teamer. Or 24, we count our, you know, if Will Lutz is healthy and our punter. I think we have the best, but the cap situation crushed our depth. Now, having said that, the amazing drafting and undrafted free agent signings that we've done allowed that depth isn't as terrible as I think that we all, if you'd have told me we were going to have 9 people get hurt, I'm like, we're screwed. This is
right. Our depth has been an issue.
2-15 team. Somehow, even with having the worst depth and all that, we've somehow got a winning record right now. But I agree with what Heath said. We have no ability to have depth with that kind of the cap maneuvers that we've done the last couple of years.
Just to throw in too, though, Dave, to get back to your question that you led this off with, was Sean Payton confident enough? To an extent, yes, I do think so, right? I think Sean Payton is confident. I think Sean Payton looked back and go, man, I had Marcus Colson, who was a 7th-round pick, and a guy that I sent deep that didn't catch the ball half the time. And, you know, Meacham, who was a #1 draft pick, who, you know, to some extent, I think the Saints are still shell-shocked from taking a wide receiver in the first round from Meacham because he never became what he was supposed to. He wound up being a solid player overall, but definitely not the #1 pick that you envision when you're drafting him. And so, yeah, they've gotten it done with not a lot to speak of at wide receiver and all. And so, yeah, I think he probably thought to some extent that he could make it work.
So now I'm going to start supporting y'all argument. If you have all those guys and they're healthy and, you know, the running game's playing the way it's playing and you still have Jameis Winston, this looks different. It looks different. It's just, I guess at some point when you lose Michael Thomas, you just realize without that number one guy, everybody else has too many holes in their game. If you have that one number one guy, that's your anchor guy, then all of a sudden it's not as big a deal that Traquan only catches three balls a week, and that Harris, while very good, is small, and you got to be careful how you use them. So, yeah. You know, I think you guys make a good point. Go ahead, Wesley.
One thing too, and Heath, I'm not trying to push your buttons with bringing up Marcus Williams, and because I supported us keeping Marcus Williams. I think he'd played good, and I think he's mostly done well as a safety this year. He's had a couple of big plays, but in general, he's done okay. With salary cap, you basically could have kept Emmanuel Sanders and Jared Cook if you would have not franchise tagged Marcus Williams. Yeah. And I realized that we had Jared Cook problems. Adam Trautman has gone to a whole new level for one, not touching the ball a whole bunch, but when he does, figuring out a way to not be.
It's fair to say I would
keep Sanders and Cook right now. I think this team looks very different.
I have some serious problems with Cook. Yeah. Serious problems, and not just because of the playoffs. I just think it's just this nonchalant, lackadaisical the way. I don't know what I would do to have him back on the team, and I should apologize to him. You just believe that there is some floor that if a guy's in the NFL, okay, yeah. Listen, I get it. Whoever replaces him, Troutman's not going to be as good as Cook because he don't have the length, but he's going to be a better blocker and a better team player, and all in all, at least a no. Yeah.
And Sanders and Cook on this team would be.
Yeah, it would be
the two best receivers.
Obviously, it came that you're right. Marcus Williams is making what, $10.5 million or something on that tag or whatever it is?
It might be just over that, close to 12.
Yeah, okay.
Something crazy.
They could have given themselves a lot of room to work with that with a backloaded contract. But it's clear that the Saints agreed with me. No, but I mean, seriously, the Saints, obviously, they got everybody else done, and they had an opportunity to give themselves even more room by getting Williams done. They were not ready to give up the kind of money long-term that it's going to take to sign Williams. It's just that simple. And I don't know that what he's done so far this year changes it any. I don't dislike Williams. It's not like I just don't like the guy. I want him off the team. And I just don't.
It's like telling me Dave doesn't like Davenport. Come on, Heath. What are we talking
about? No, seriously.
Everybody that's listening to this podcast drove off the side of the road. Apologize to all the listeners for slamming on your brakes.
All right. You're right. I can't even do it with a straight face.
But no, listen, I like your objectivity and that you're trying to make a point.
You're trying.
You got to give the kid points for trying. I don't know. Okay, so what are we saying here? Or what are you two saying? Marcus Williams, not worth it? Is he going to get that contract in the offseason?
Saying that. And to be serious now, I would be up for signing Marcus Williams for a lot less than what I know Marcus Williams is going to be looking for.
Agreed.
Okay. And so, but I agree with you, Dave, again, just to kind of jump back, you're right about the drafting thing. I have never understood the Saints drafting strategy for the most part. However, it's hard to nitpick it too bad when you look at the overall success
and the history. So our best, at least not the best receiver.
But every time I'm waiting for that new shiny toy and they pick another offensive lineman, or they pick another defensive end that nobody's heard of that played five games in college or whatever. And like you said, with how many picks were for Trautman and moving this and doing that. I agree with you, dude. There was obviously some picks there
I want to clarify, too, is I'm not talking about first round draft picks, man. I'm talking about a third rounder. Let's also look back at that, the team, the Super Bowl team. With nobody's name's going to come to mind, but okay. So you have Marcus Colston was kind of your go-to guy, seventh rounder. Meacham was a first rounder. Devery Henderson was a second rounder, although drafted by the previous regime.
You got Zach Streif, Jari Evans, and Zach Streif.
There were no linemen. I'm talking about receivers.
You're just talking about receivers. Okay.
And so my point is that it's not like we didn't have high picks who were at least good, very good at something meaning Devery. But I tell you what, boy, I think of Devery Henderson. I can remember many a times we're like, you got to get rid of that bum. He can't catch nothing. He just hurts his team. Yeah, and so like that's also the thing that makes me think White. Like you telling me White is still fast. He's big. He can't drop balls like Henderson used to do it. At least get on the field. But apparently,
the thing
that's
about
what
Henderson was he got open downfield enough and caught just enough of them that teams still had to pay attention to.
Yes, yes.
Also, that your Pierre Thomas might have been one of your best receivers on the team as a running back, and he was undrafted too.
Right, yeah. Right. And I'm just saying that there was resources used. So it's not like they were all undrafted free agents.
No.
You know, and again, none of them developed into first and second round draft picks like they should have been, but they were talented players. And I guess we can move on from this. I'm just simply saying that the dynamics of our receiving core, look at Atlanta, Gage, and those other bums. We were talking about, man, they're garbage, man. They don't have, all they have is the rookie. At the end of the day, their bums were significantly better than our bums. I mean, because you got to realize our bums are going up against a terrible defense. Their bums were going up against a good defense with a very good back end. And they were still getting open and making plays. And my point being is, while none of them, Gage isn't perceived as a number one. And then people are like, oh, man, Traquan Smith, he ain't a number one. Nobody ever said he was a number one. But what you want to have is some third round picks in there that can get open, catch the ball and be pretty consistent and, you know, not great, but good players. And that's what it looks to me like Atlanta has. And we have a bunch of undrafted free agents that are inconsistent and sometimes can play, sometimes don't. Like I look at at Callaway, and I mean, look, he has great hands and he'll make a few plays, but he's not a consistent receiver. Now, if he was the number three with Thomas on the field, he'd probably look different. I guess we need to move on.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. In the second half, all of these same guys that we're talking about made plays.
Yeah.
Troutman had four or five receptions in a row, including one downfield. He got turned upside, landed on his head, held on to the ball.
Kenny Stills made Troutman made an amazing touchdown catch. Kenny Stills started. And Dave, dude, I mean, point out, you were right. Our defensive backfield was so opportunistic that Super Bowl year. I mean, it's like they were drugging people. It was
yeah. How long did you sit on that one?
He's been waiting.
He's like, I don't want to interrupt Dave, but I got to pull this one out. But anyway, we'll move on from that. But again, I just feel like
we were raping offenses during this season. No, I'm sorry.
That was both of you.
just pulling their pants down and embarrassing them.
Oh boy.
Order here.
All right. So that's my list. What else is there? Heath, I'm not going to say any final thoughts, but I'm going to say something that you want to talk about. I just didn't want to go into the same thing, bashing everybody for certain things. There were things that I wanted to kind of talk about how we could have done things a little bit differently or better. Let's talk about OBJ. I keep checking my phone. It's Tuesday. He passed through waivers. They said that chances are he was going to Green Bay, but then the Saints have just not let it go. So all this talk about, well, if the Saints are interested.
Yeah, the Saints can be as interested as they want, I think. You know, number one, the Saints don't really have reason. Look, the only way the Saints can come up with anything competitive to sign in is if they go to him and say, hey, man, we'll sign you to 5 years at some ridiculous amount of money, you're going to be on this team making $15 million a year for the next. I mean, that's literally the only thing they can do, because what you're going up against is, hey, Odell, don't go sign with Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams, who's going to be on the other side drawing double teams and, you know, come catch passes from
Trevor Simeon.
I almost said Travis something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's my fault. That's my fault.
Taysom Hill and the guys that you're going to be, you know, trying to get drawn a double team off of you is going to be Marquez Callaway. And, you know, I mean, it's like there's no comparison on paper, right? If Green Bay comes calling. If the Saints come calling. So the only way the Saints can compete, you're going to have Beckham. You're going to be on the hook for some serious money for a long period of time for a guy who, quite frankly, I don't want in that situation, because he's got too much crap with him all the time. And I don't want to be tied to a guy like that long-term for nothing, man. I just assume roll with what we got this season, call it a reset year or whatever, and move, you know. I don't, that's just my
opinion. And I think this question, and Wesley, someone today in the message group said, everybody, and I think they said even Hitler had people who supported him and people against him, because I've heard both sides of the story and both people have compelling arguments. Last night, someone emphasized that he forced his way off of two teams in New York and in Cleveland, And that's a good point. But then I've also heard that people say he's a fantastic teammate. I know you have a little bit of different opinion than Heath. Give me your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I got a different opinion than Heath. By the way, Dave, I think Marge Schott's dead. I'm not sure who else is supporting Hitler, but I think she was the last one. I would say we've heard from lots of people that, I mean, he was a great teammate with at LSU and with the Giants. Let's be clear. The Giants signed him to a $90 million contract just a few months before they traded him. All the little drama stuff with the kicking net and all that, there are people, they gave him $90 million after that. They traded him because Eli Manning started sucking really fast and they went into full rebuild mode. There was no reason to have a $90 million receiver. It wasn't because of the drama. It wasn't because he was a bad teammate. It's because the team was garbage and they knew they had no use for him. And then again, we come out with the Browns. Apparently there's some weird thing with him and Baker, but Myles Garrett, who's on defense, who doesn't seem to get along with most people in the league, came out and said that Odell's an amazing teammate. They were going to miss him. I mean, that he's one of the most popular guys in the locker room. He's a leader in the locker room, even with all the stuff that's been going on and his injuries that he's been dealing with the last couple of years. I mean, I'll take Myles Garrett, who had the perfect opportunity to trash the guy because he talked about him after he got his release.
Right.
So perfect time to go, yeah, screw that guy. We don't need him. We're going to beat the Bengals this week without him. We'll show him. We're going to go on a Super Bowl run. We don't need that jerk. So I'm not going to call him a bad teammate. Apparently what we're looking at is the Pats, Chiefs, and Saints is the current thing that Odell Beckham's camp has spoken to those three teams, like in the last hour. That's the talk is those three teams. Nothing's coming out about the Packers except for some guy saying that he wanted to go to the Packers, but nobody's reporting that he's even spoken to them.
Well, here's another thing to keep in mind. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, and I was going to say one last thing. We waited all year for Chase Hansen to come back healthy. And then we cut him today. Now, again, it saves us $450,000. So now the Saints have $1.55 million and we have an open roster spot. I Chase Hansen's not going to make a difference on this damn team.
Okay, that's not what everybody's saying, though.
Why did we cut him to have 52 people on the roster instead of 53 and to clear $500,000 unless we're trying to do something?
I have my thoughts. And then when people say that, I'm like, come on, man. I mean, what Odell Beckham ain't coming here for 1.5. Yeah.
He's going to buy lunch for him when he gets here.
But I do see, because I'm open-minded like that, Wesley,
Here's one other thing to keep in mind about Odell Beckham. It's been 2 years since he's done anything of substance. He had 17 receptions this year and 23 last year. You got to go back to 2019 to the last time he did anything Odell Beckham-like of what people think of when they think of him. So you don't really know exactly what you're getting right now as far as I'm concerned.
A pretty awesome game against the Cowboys last year where he led them to a win.
Well, yeah, a game.
One game. It was only a 16-game season.
Wesley's loaded, got all the information right in his hands.
I just hate the Cowboys.
I don't know, man. I mean, we need the guy. I'm in this court. If we can sign him this year, I just don't see how cutting somebody and saving $500,000 does anything in a way. Because at the end of the day, one way or another, you got to sign somebody else unless you. We go to, like, let's just say a 43 man roster, 42, maybe 38 guys to have enough money to pay Odell.
When I saw that tweet, my first thought was, okay, 20 more to go and we might be getting somebody.
Yeah, right. You know? I mean, it's
like, but look, let me paint this picture for you. I kind of alluded to this before. Can you imagine a situation if Jameis Winston hadn't got hurt and you put Harris on the left and Odell Beckham Jr. on the right and tell them both run deep? Jameis, you throw it high and deep down the middle and let one of them call mine. You know what I'm saying? Whoever gets down there first. It's like I could imagine a situation with the pretty passes that we saw from Jameis Winston going downfield. What it would have been like to have two guys that could get downfield like that. But anyway.
And, I mean, we could just do three with Kevin White.
White, yeah, you miss White.
What are we talking about here?
So,
let him drag people deep because he ain't going to catch it anyway.
All right. That's rude. All right, Wesley, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I we talked about it for half a second. I would say that with even with the crap of losing this game, I think we kind of buried the lead on Trevor Siemian crushed this past week.
Yeah,
we just barely mentioned it. Honestly, if NFL receivers make basic catches that I believe a high school wide receiver should catch, he has a 330-yard passing game with four touchdowns, and we score 40 points pretty easily. Like, it's kind of non-debatable. And I don't have any idea if next week he's going to throw four interceptions and no touchdowns. I'm not saying get the long-term contract out. Trevor Siemian's the future. He's still young enough to lead us. But he, in this game, played an amazing game. Could not ask for any better. This would have – probably is the best game that one of our quarterbacks played this year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, all the rest of them could be the worst games that any of our quarterbacks played this year. And I hate that he's not going to get credit for it because – he deserved to win. He deserved a 300-yard passing game and deserved some highlights. But super proud of that guy. And, again, I had no faith that he's ever going to do it again. I don't know. It was good to see that it's possible.
I want to piggyback off of that, and I'm glad you brought it back up because it's been a thorn in my side since Sunday, and it's frustrating to listen to I try to avoid criticizing the masses, but it's low-hanging fruit to just blame everything on the quarterback. Yep. He might have played pretty good, but you can't give him those drop balls. And, you know, if somebody else would have been in the game, they're a real winner. And shut up, man. At the end of the day,
maybe we should turn to Taysom Hill, which is the other.
That's where I'm going with this. And that's what I've been reading. It's just, I don't know how you get there. I see people doing it, and it all boils down to nonsense. And I love, you said everything I would say, because the fact of the matter is he hasn't shown it enough to make us think or be confident that he'll do it again next week. But we've seen what Taysom can do. We know what Taysom is. He came in, man. He did light a little spark. He completed two passes in a row. They look nice. If he's an NFL quarterback, to not be able to complete those two passes, then he should never be trying to play quarterback. He's not garbage, but at the end of the day, I just don't know how you can look at what we had and say, no, you need to switch that out. And that's just silly. It's low-hanging fruit. Talk about the real issues. Talk about the things that are wrong with the team and quit just, everything's about the quarterback. It's just not that simple. Heath, any final thoughts?
I would just piggyback on that. I said last week before this game, there was another guy that was around last year in the quarterback room with Drew Brees learning something, right? A guy that has some skills. He's had some starts. He's thrown, through almost as many interceptions as he had touchdowns. He was another guy kind of in a similar situation. And I think he came out this week and he did what I was hoping he was going to do, that he learned how to play within what he was capable of and not make stupid mistakes. And all we can, what I'm hoping now is that it wasn't just a 1 week thing. I hope he can continue to play that way. Because I mean, honestly, overall, you lose the big play, the deep pass, like with Jameis Winston, but what Trevor Siemian did this week, quite frankly, is better than anything that Jameis did for an entire game in any of his starts.
The 15 to 20 yard pass, he's great
right,
on.
I right. mean, it's, I think less people would even be questioned that had the guys caught all of the passes that they should have caught.
Right.
But even beyond that, I can see it. And so now I'm not sitting here trying to tell you that I don't think Siemian is,
the end all be all. No, yeah, nobody's saying that. But this game.
Right.
This
but game. If he can keep it contained like Jameis did, okay, doesn't have to be fantastic. It doesn't have to be. But if he can just do about the same thing and the guys actually give him some help and catch the damn ball, and we have a bit of a running game and we play good defense like we had been, not like this past week, then I think we could be successful with him, right. Successful enough. I ain't going to claim we challenge him for a Super Bowl, but I think we could stay on track to be a playoff team.
Right.
Wild card team, if nothing else,
Right. Nothing else really to add to that. I did have something. While we all throwing our shoulders out, patting ourselves on the back, I said that he would throw for the most yards of any quarterback this season prior to the game. Just the little bit that I saw him in the Tampa Bay game, I saw some quick decisions and I saw an offense that ran a little bit more efficient. He don't have the raw talent that Jameis Winston has. If Jameis Winston could throw the short to intermediate passes with the same touch and accuracy, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. It'd be just like, when is Jameis going to be back? And so does Jameis keep developing, or does this open my eyes to say, you know, Simeon looks like he may be kind of more one-dimensional, like you need something better if you want to really compete. But now I look at Jameis and say, man, it's hard to tell me that that part of his game wasn't Jameis's fault. So it's like, seems to me now that I have more questions about Jameis and his short to intermediate game than I did before. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out, because
and Peyton, out of Jameis and Trevor together have 16 touchdowns and 3 interceptions this year. Insane. I mean, to think about this receiving crew. And I mean, I think you were kind of alluding to it, but I mean, Trevor Siemian is not 2011 Breeze, and he's got more lively arm for that 15 to 20 yard pass than 2019 Breeze.
Right.
But he's somewhere in that 2015-16 Breeze. Right. He could, I mean, if he made good decisions, could repeat that. And that's a team that can go in the playoffs and win.
Right. And that's really the key to it. You know what? I was about to say something. I realized we didn't have Thomas last year. No. But we did have Sanders. And we did have Cook, even though with his issues. I don't know. I'm trying to say, you know, if he could just play like the end of career Breeze,
I mean,
we have something. But Breeze had, believe it or not, Breeze had more to work with last year than what we have this year.
Well, let's remember too that Troutman and Callaway are young guys. Let's hope that they could progress through the, you know, the rest of the season. And by the time we get to that point, they're better versions than what
they are. It doesn't matter, Heath. It doesn't matter. You start off, if you're not dominant by your rookie year, you're garbage. And I will say, though, Troutman has made more arguments than anybody else for. But listen, he was literally 2 years ago playing against good top level high school talent. And matter of fact, the things I was seeing today is, what about Baker? How come we haven't seen Baker yet? You realize that Baker was playing at a college that was essentially, I mean, there are high schools in Texas that are.
It's basically a junior college.
Yes.
There was games that they had like 14 people at in college.
That's what I read. There were like 50 to 100 people in a college game. The point is the kid is not ready, but that doesn't mean that in the future it's back to Zach Bond. It's back to, these are developmental people that fans are just expecting them to be great. Let's talk about Troutman just for a quick second. Awful. Having said that, and people are like, oh, he's our starter.
Well, that about wraps it up.
Who else are the Saints going to start? Who's going to bench Troutman?
Juwan Johnson wasn't even active.
But even if he was, receiving wise, yeah, but is he going to inline block?
No.
I mean, and okay, Vernette.
Garrett Griffin, Nick Vannett.
I heard there was another Carol Burnett was another tight end. I've yet to see him. And, you know, quite frankly, if he does get healthy, you might see that Troutman's role gets reduced. But right now, it's almost, I feel bad for the guy because he's not ready. It's obvious that he's not ready. And hell, maybe he'll never be ready. But at this point, you almost want to say, listen, just come sit down and catch your breath, man. Just refocus. But who else they gonna put in?
There's a jugs machine over there. Go stand over there and catch the ball.
Johnson wasn't active, and Griffin, who showed a little something a week before, didn't get in the game at all, even though he was active. So they stuck with Troutman all the way throughout. I mean,
Griffin, the playmaker, baby. I mean, I was saying during the game, we need to get him in there just to get the offense going.
Yeah, he caught it.
No. All right, that's all the show that we have for you this week. So for Heath Elson-San, Wesley Coleman, and all the great shows on the Dome Patrol Network, where you can get a variety of great shows on one feed, the Dome Patrol Main Show, The Tiger's Den with Scott Greenbaum, Taking the Over with Billy Gunn, and Premier League with Ben and James, I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, go give your time to Davey, Heath, and Thomas. We do this every week, every Wednesday, so don't miss. We do this every week, every Wednesday, so don't miss. We have a lot of fun, I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun, I love this podcast, oh. We have a lot of fun, I love this podcast.
We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast, oh. Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, girl, give your time to Davy, Heath, and Thomas. We do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss.
Warning, the next minute or so contains some foul language, but we decided to leave it in.
You nailed the outro, Dave. Yes. Seriously. You're really I'm making strides. It just gets more and more refined
every
week. By the time the off season comes and we're not doing podcasts anymore,
you'll have it. Down. I might even put it on this Word document here and read it, and it might even be a little bit.
Yeah, because I'm sure the Dome Patrol guys are not going to be happy with you saying, "What is it? The Dome Patrol Network."
All right, now I'm gonna have to cut it out and redo it. I see how it is. All right, I'm gonna write it down because I want
Jeff
be
emailed it to you. You just need to pull up the email.
No, but I mean, first of all, I'm not
like you don't need to print it or write it down or hang it
first
up.
First of all, he sent it in something that was like Google Docs and I had to download it and all that. But two, I don't want to say the same thing they say. And quite frankly, that's I mean, you know, like, hey, check out the shit, man. What do you want me to say? I ain't you. I ain't them. I'm me.
I'm pretty sure Google Docs is the like number one document app on the entire planet.
Yeah, but the thing about it is I had to get his
permission. How dare he?
He sent it and I had to fucking click on something and check a box and then get his permission for me to download it. And I was like, man, fuck all this, man. Just send the goddamn thing in a fucking Word document and get this over with, man. So I will fix that. Thank you for
attach it to a pigeon and send it out here to the holler.
All right, fellas, man. Y'all leave me alone. I'll talk to y'all later.
Yeah, good show, guys.